World Economic Report on DriveTime.
Indeed, that's what it is. Weekly World Economic Report. And in today, we've got a lot of things to look at. The economic crisis in Venezuela. That's what it is. Meanwhile, the United States and China have continued talks aimed at finding a solution to a trade war that should never have started in the first place. This is a big one. In Africa, Nigeria is set to become Africa's biggest maize producer. Yeah, Nigeria is not just jungles. On the local front, the entire board of the Public Investment Corporation resigned. Yeah, lots on that one. And then, of course, online to help us understand all of this is Dr. Jason Misiorka, Senior Research Fellow, Development and Economics at the University of Pretoria. Dr. Misiorka, welcome to the show.
Shafiq, thank you so much for having me. Good to be back again.
A full menu this afternoon. The first one, Venezuela, that's a big one. And I think a lot of people do not seem to understand that Venezuela might have a political problem, but probably the more serious scenario it faces is its economic meltdown.
That is very true, Shafiq. I think every time there is a political crisis anywhere, it is often followed by economic crisis. It's usually not the other way around. We have a lot of countries that collapse economically, but they still remain politically stable. But there's no country that collapses politically and sustains its economy. History tells us that correlation stays with the political instability as the driving variable. So as far as Venezuela is concerned, the crisis is even deepening, especially given that we are seeing increasing pressure from the European Union, the Americans, of course, the Lima Group. The Lima Group consists of 14 Latin American countries. 11 of those are in support of the opposition leader. And on the other side, we've got 15 EU countries, including the Spanish, the British, the French as well, the Germans. They're all in support of the opposition. The President of the United States has stated that he's willing to consider military option as well. And then on the other side of the aisle, you've got Russia and China, who are in support of Nicolas Maduro, the government in power. So this is going to be a potentially brutal proxy war if it gets to that point. I don't see it getting into a war situation, but we also know historically that when these tensions begin to rise, then the ultimately it becomes more the interests of these countries that are external than the local Venezuelans themselves. Now, what is likely to happen, as we've already started to see, is a skyrocketing prices, inflation rate very high. We also do know that unemployment in Venezuela has soared up to 44%, and that is the official. I mean, that's the government that is giving us those statistics. I'm pretty sure that it is definitely much higher than that. So, and then we also have an humanitarian crisis where Nicolas Maduro does not want to allow international partners to bring in humanitarian aid. So this is an economic issue, probably much more than political, and it is likely to cause the ripple effect. The issue is that as much as the external parties are playing politics in Venezuela, it will backfire as economic on an international platform. And by which I mean, you have the Chinese busy negotiating with the Americans on this other side in terms of tariffs. This is likely to poison these kinds of discussions. And then you've got, of course, regimes that are putting sanctions, economic sanctions against Venezuela. Those are likely to start waging proxy wars as well, economic wars, so to speak.
Why is everybody so focused on Venezuela? I mean, we see reports that it's got the most amount of oil reserves in the world, but it gets slightly irritating when you have to point out to people that this is not the best quality oil. It's not what they call sweet crude like you can find in parts of Iran and Iraq. I mean, this is oil that needs a lot of refining and only becomes profitable when it gets to well over $50 a barrel.
So I think there are two factors to consider here. The one is that Nicolas Maduro's government and his predecessors, Hugo Chavez, is a socialist, was Hugo Chavez was a socialist regime, and Nicolas Maduro the same. So you have, this is the reason why Russia and China are in support of a socialist regime. We do know that historically, going way back to the Cold War that ran the better part of the last century, the Americans have never supported a socialist regime. So you have a continuity of a Cold War. These are really, for me, the ghosts of the last century, where regimes are still being, or you know, ideological alignments still tend to happen based on the economic policies of these countries. We know, as a matter of fact, that Nicolas Maduro has actually written to the Pope. The Pope is been very left-leaning, as we know, and he's been very vocal politically in support of left-leaning regimes. So this is an ideological, economic ideological game playing out here between the former Soviet Union and the Cold War alignments. And on the other side, you've got the capitalists, who will be the Europeans, the Americans, and so on, who follow a much more capitalistic pathway. So that's where it really is coming from. And it's unlikely to end well, because everybody would then try and prop up their ideological partners. And that is going to just become a proxy economic tension.
What is the win-win situation for Venezuela? Because even in South Africa, people get quite excited about it. There are a number of, for example, listeners to Voice of the Cape who support Maduro. Others might support what's being done on the other side. But there's a lot of sort of pro-socialist sentiment. So it becomes an emotionally dividing issue at dinner tables.
Absolutely. I think the ideological differences between most of the West, which is largely they follow capitalist or open market strength, and you've got Latin Americans who have largely been on the left. As a matter of fact, they much of the debates that were going on for liberation of South Africa during the apartheid regime, they very much linked to what was going on in the 1960s and 70s within the Latin American countries. One of the most prominent theologians in the last century, Guterres, he is a Latin American from Peru, and he is a key advocate of economic liberation, pretty much the same debate that was going on in South Africa in the last century. So those kinds of debates are based on the socialist side. It's largely redistribution. Everybody needs to own a stake of the economy. And then on the other side, you've got those who argue that let's not regulate economies. Let's let people just trade. Let them compete. Let them thrive individually. So that is always, it's a global debate. We have not resolved that question, even though we know the Berlin Wall collapsed in the 1990s, which very interestingly coincided with South Africa's transition to democracy. But the reality here is that this is a global platform where the socialist regimes, or the former socialist regimes, play out against the capitalist regimes. I would also suggest that we've seen the playing out of these two ideologies even in the ongoing debate about the tariffs and the war between the Americans and the Chinese, the economic tensions that are happening at the moment. In Davos, we know that we all got surprised when China stood up to protect or to argue that globalization is the future. Socialist regimes have never argued along that route, but partly they stepped in to cover a lack of leadership from the United States. The Davos process is usually a capitalist process. But then China was there as a leading power last year in 2018. So these kinds of ideological differences, they do manifest in a much more subtle way these days than they did during the Cold War. But I don't think they are going away soon. I think they are political as much as they are economic, and nobody wants to lose their grounds.
Do you think Venezuela can get out of this hole? Because I think as South Africans, we all feel a huge amount of sympathy for just the normal person in the streets of Caracas, for example. I was told that in Caracas, they only get water 3 times a week if they're lucky, electricity just for a few times a day. This is the capital city.
It is a very sad situation that's going on. And adding to what you've just mentioned, the crisis of the humanitarian crisis, is the fact that even when the international community would like to provide humanitarian aid, the government in power does not want people to receive humanitarian aid. So, and the argument they are making is that this is in support of the opposition. So in the end, you have the ordinary Venezuelan who is suffering food. Most of them cannot afford food anymore, which is really a basic for survival. And my take of this situation is that it is going to be very difficult for Nicolas Maduro to step down from power. And he really believes that he won, even though he won by about 1%, 0.8, 0.9%. So it is going to be very difficult for him to step down. Not primarily because the elections were so close. That's part of the reason. But the bigger issue here is the fact that the people that he's always hated, who are the Americans and the Europeans, these are the guys that are telling him to get out of power. So as a political statement, he's going to stay put. I don't see him backing down. I see him, especially given the backing by the Russians. We do know that the Russians have already sent troops as early as last 2 weeks who are propping up. It really is the first country to send troops to prop up the government in power. This is likely, if we are not very careful, we are likely to have a replay of the Syrian situation where it's really proxy wars between the empires, and unfortunately the ordinary Venezuelan bears the biggest challenge or burden.
So sad. You're listening to Weekly World Economic Report on Drive Time. We are going to cut away for the 4:30 headlines. When we come back with Dr. Jason Misuoka, we're going to be having a look at U.S.-China trade war and Nigeria becoming Africa's biggest maize producer. That's interesting. Stay tuned.
Weekly World Economic Report on DriveTime.
Let's get back to Weekly World Economic Report with Dr. Jason Misuoka, Senior Research Fellow at the University of Pretoria. Dr. Misuoka, talks about China and the U.S. Trying to find a solution to their trade war. It's a trade war that should never have started in the first place. But are you optimistic that the Trump administration and China can come to some kind of an agreement?
What is interesting, and I suppose this hitches to what we were talking about earlier, where there are political differences between the countries, at least in a proxy environment like Venezuela. There's a report that came out on the 4th of that was yesterday, and the Americans, they do not see the possibility of resolving the tariff war amicably with the Chinese. And we've heard now voices coming out of the White House that are suggesting that they should not continue with the discussions. So this relates to one, the Venezuela issue, but it also relates to what we spoke about in the World Economic Report last week about the fact that the Americans are accusing the Chinese of tapping their technology and also trading with Iran when they were not supposed to trade with Iran in the first place. So there is already a distrust between the two on a political level, and the Americans, the White House is suggesting that they need to continue with their unilateral approach in terms of protecting U.S. workers, farmers, and businesses. So I don't think there is an end in sight yet. Things might change, but certainly the Venezuelan issue complicates even beyond where we were last week. We had one issue to deal with. Now we have two major issues to deal with, which is the Venezuela factor and the Huawei mobile company factor. So these two are really white elephants, so to speak, on the table. And as we do know, the Trump administration has been wanting to use a stick much more than the carrot, not very much interested in diplomacy. So these issues are going to be very critical for the Americans in terms of the negotiations. They do not want to give ground, and we don't know where it's going to end, but what we know is that we are going to have ongoing tariff war, at least for the foreseeable future.
Okay, let's get to Africa, and this is interesting. Nigeria is a big country. I think we all acknowledge that. It's an amazing country despite its crazy politics and corruption, and we can't point fingers on that anymore. Nigeria just keeps on trucking. Now they're set to become Africa's biggest maize producer. I didn't know that they even grew maize.
Yeah, this is quite interesting. On one side, technically speaking, South Africa has much more advanced technology in terms of agriculture. And even though they planned, in South Africa, we planned a smaller, we usually plant about 2.6 million hectares. And on the other side, Nigerians, on average, they do about 6.5 million hectares, at least in the last financial year. What this means is that Nigeria, they plant almost three times bigger more hectares than South Africa does. But because of technology, traditionally South Africa has been the leading producer of maize, partly because of genetically modified food as well, those technologies. What we have seen, though, in the last financial year, which is the 2017-18, production season, we do know that there was a drought that came in. We had quite a bad drought, which nearly got us into recession in 2015. But in the western part of the country, in South Africa, we've lost a lot of produce because of the lingering drought that was there in the course of late last year and emerging into early this year. So that has cut down our production significantly. And keeping the scales, where the Nigerians now they produce about 11 million tons, or at least in the last productive season, compared to about 10 million tons for South Africa. So officially now, statistically, Nigerians are the largest producers, having overtaken South Africa. The future might be where South Africa perhaps needs to even use more technologies and rely less on climatic change. I need to mention that because Nigeria is part of the equatorial region, the effects of climate change are much more adverse in South Africa than they are in Nigeria. And even though the Nigerians, they don't use the same technologies that we are using here, but the sections of South Africa that use or rely on climate, on the environment and the climate and the rainfall and so on, we will have to change that in the future.
And let's just quickly get to our final question as we start to wind down. Resignations of the Public Investment Corporation. I think that's another basasa, isn't it?
There is so much scandal coming out of there. And, you know, what is interesting is that it just never seems to get to the bottom. We actually know that even some of the people or technocrats that are in the current administration, the Deputy Minister of Finance, he's actually implicated in the PIC saga, the corruption scandals, the investments, the irregular investments that they have made. And keep in mind that the PIC's money is actually the pension money for government employees. So this is not even money that we should be talking about being squandered in this way. There need to be a proper structure in terms of how this money is invested. What happens if the money gets lost? We are looking at upwards of about 3 million government employees who are likely to lose their pension if we mismanage the PIC fund. So that scandal is, one of the interesting things for me is that the black middle class in South Africa is largely those public servants. The moment that you start tinkering with the small security, social security that they have, which is your pensions and so on, then we are talking of a potential serious collapse of the foundations of the black middle class, which is emerging. And it is not far-fetched to argue that at this rate with the PIC, we might be heading to a future without a black middle class, or with a very small middle class than it was previously. But these people are going to become poor in the future if you don't have proper social security. I don't think we'll get there, but it is a thought to entertain, given the scandals at the moment.
The warning is out there. Dr. Jason Masioka, Senior Research Fellow, University of Pretoria, our weekly World Economic Report guru. Thanks a lot, and we look forward to chatting to you same time next week.
Thank you so much, Shafiq, for having me.
Weekly World Economic Report on DriveTime.
Voice of the Cape, 91.3 FM stereo. My radio station, your radio station, our radio station, the Voice of the Cape.
Looking to buy bubble wrap, corrugated boxes, refuse bags or heat sealers? RT Packaging stocks an extensive range of products. You name it, we have it. For your convenience, visit our online store at shop.rtpackaging.co.za or simply pop into our retail store, conveniently located at Unit 15C, Hillstar Avenue, Wetton. No transport, no worries. We provide a delivery service to your door. RT Packaging, your one-stop packaging shop. For more info, call us on 021-761-2204.
Now on promotion. Twin Saver One-Ply Toilet Paper. 48 rolls selling at 145 Rand. In-store only. T's and C's apply.
The Voice of the Cape. 91.3 FM stereo.
Radio station, your radio station, our radio station, the Voice of the Cape.